Lecha. That's not the following, but we're really going into a little bit later on in the parsha. Yom HaShem Avram. God said to Abraham, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha Me'lo'atzecha Me'bisav Yichalaretz Sharaka. Go out of your land, out of the place you were born, and from the house of your father to the land that I'm going to show you. Okay, so Avram Avinu goes through many tests in this week's parsha. Not all the tests. Not, you know, Ur Kasdim was a test in the week before. This question whether Ur Kasdim is really considered a test. But at least he went through Lech Lecha. He had to go to Eretz Yisrael. He had to survive the Rav, the hunger that was there. He went down to Mitzrayim with Sarai. He had the war against the four kings. He had to go, he had Lot, that was, you know, in Sidon, that doesn't count as a separate test. He had the Bris Milah in this week's Parsha, and the Bris Ben Abisarim in this week's Parsha. This is like a loaded Parsha. Loaded Parsha for Avram, you know, and everything that goes on with them, without a question. There's, and Perek Yudalit Pasagalos, it really goes through the names of the four kings, Vayibi Me'am Rothel, Melech Shinar, Aryoch Melech Alasar, Kedor Laomer Melech Elam, Sidol Melech Goyim, it's Yudalit Al, the very beginning of Revi. And the Ramban tells us that each one of these nations, the four kings, each stood for one of the exiles that Bnei Yisrael had later on in life. Meaning there are four exiles altogether, Babel, Modei and Paras, Yavon and Edom, each one stood for one of them. For example, Shinar is another name for Babel. So Melech Shinar referred to Babel. That's a Nimrod as well. Amraphel was known as the Omar Lipol Kibshana Esh. That's what Rashi says. Nimrod was the king in Babel. Elosser is a city in Paras. It's a city in Persia. So Elosser refers to that. Elam is in Yavon. Elam is a city in Greece. And then we have Goyim, which stands for Edom, which is all the nations together, which is this Golos. The Golos of 2,000 years where everybody goes together. Somehow, this whole war becomes a predecessor for every bit of Golos that we are in, that we go into, from that point on. Right after Avram Avinu got out of Mitzrayim, right after we left Mitzrayim with Sarai, they immediately came to the War of the Four Kings, or something that happened, Lot had to leave, the Four Kings happened, and there's an immediate, after Golos Mitzrayim, we have the four exiles, the four Goloses that we had after that, and there's a connection between them. Okay, this is what we have to understand. There are unbelievable similarities between Golos Mitzrayim and this and what Avram Avinu did in Mitzrayim. I'm going to give a couple things over here.
This seems to be a very common thing, though, about how one of the Goloses represent the four Goloses. Like, this happens often.
One of the kings stand for the four Goloses quite a bit. How could his brothers be Marames to it all over the place? In Remes, these types of things come up. The question is, why here over anywhere else? So each place you'll see it, you have to ask, why did God want it here? This would be the first time that he's... Well, no, the first time is actually in the Four Rivers in Bereshis. That's the first time that they're mentioned. But this is one of the first times that it's mentioned. So that it is very, very strange. Why do we do it over here? Why are we talking about it over here? So I have 9 similar... Oh, actually, 11. I added on to this year. 11 similarities between Golos Mitzrayim, when we went down to Mitzrayim, and Avram Avinu going down. Here's the deal. Number one, they went down because of a hunger. There was a hunger in Eretz Yisrael both times. Yaakov Avinu and the Shvatim went down, and also by Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu went down because there was a rov in Eretz Canaan. Number two, they were nice at first, and they were very friendly at first, even though they didn't last. Paro at first was very friendly. He gave Avram Avinu whatever he wanted. Hetiv lo ba'avura, ba'yilo, tsonu bakar, ba'chomari. He got all these things. Very nice at first. So too, Mitzrayim with Yosef and Tzadik there. The people were very, very nice to the Jews and everything was all good. Number three, there was a desire when they first came down there. Meaning here, there was a desire for Sarai. People saw Sarai and saw she was beautiful. When Yosef came down, Yosef was absolutely beautiful and Ishis Potiphar wanted. It's the opposite. Guy to girl, girl to guy. But the same type of idea of a desire from a man to woman or woman to a man. Number four, there was a bit of a lie that led to something. Over here by Avram, Imri Na'a Chosiat, say that you're my sister. A bit of a lie, although we know that Rashi says it's the MS. But Lamaise, it's a bit of a lie, it sounded a little bit off. The Mitzrayim did the exact same thing to Bnei Yisrael, to Klal Yisrael. They said, come, we'll all work together, and we'll build up these cities, and then we know they ended up not allowing them to go through.
I would say a different lie about Yosef.
About Yosef?
Yosef lied to his brothers.
Well, yeah, they're not lying.
He lied. No, he misled. I mean, there's totally something.
Lashon Hara? I mean, that's all you got. Deceiving them when they came down, you mean? Okay, that could count as well. I mean, he wasn't a myth. Yeah, that could count as well. Number five, captured. Bnei Yisrael were captured and not allowed to leave. They weren't allowed to leave. Sarai was captured into Beis Paro and she wasn't allowed to leave. Number six, Bayinoga. Paro got negayim. Paro was plagued by Makos when he had taken Sarai. There were plagues that were given over to Paro because of it. So too with the Makos that Mitzrayim got later on. Number seven, they were thrown out by Paro. unceremoniously. At the very end, we know in Mitzrayim that they were thrown out. Paro said, "Get out of here! I don't want to see you ever again." And over here as well, they were taken out from Mitzrayim, and they were taken out from where, from Avraham Avinu was not allowed to be there anymore. He said, "Get out of here! Take it and go. Take your wife and get out of here." That's what he told Avraham Avinu. Number eight, they both left with riches. Avraham Avinu left with a ton of riches when he left Mitzrayim. Ton of riches. And so too, when what's it called was there, when Avraham Avinu was there, he came out unbelievably rich. He went in poor and came out extremely rich. Number nine, men were brought with them when they left. When Bnei Yisrael left, there was the Erev Rav. This time, it says, Paro sent men with Avraham Avinu. So when he left, there'd be men with him. There'd be other people with him, just like the Erev Rav. Number 10, there's Chus Nashim involved. The Chus of the Nashim, Sarai, had enough of his Chus that a Malach saved her inside the palace, and that she wasn't forced to do anything bad. And so too with Klal Yisrael, they were saved the Chus HaNashim, says the Gemara. They were saved the Chus HaNashim. Number 11, the last one, right afterward, they started traveling. The 39 travels of Klal Yisrael versus the Avraham Avinu going all over the place, and he went to the south, and then he went up north a little bit. By Yelach Lamasa'ov, you went down to his travels. 11 major similarities between the story. I'm sorry. The 10th was Schus Nashim. That woman were the ones that saved them. We have an unbelievable amount of similarities between what happened with Avraham Avinu and what happened later on in Mitzrayim. So we know this concept. We know the concept. What's the concept called? Maisa Avos Sivan Labanim. Something that happens to Avraham Avinu, to Yitzchak, or Yaakov is something that us, our children, are supposed to have. Avraham Avinu is doing something for Klal Yisrael when they're going to go into Mitzrayim. Now that I understand. But there's a strange part of the story that I want to explain before we go anywhere else. This part of the story makes absolutely no sense to me. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think I've seen anybody say anything on it. I keep looking around for something like this, and I can't figure it out. What is Avraham Avinu when he first sees Sarai? Remember, he looks at her, he sees in the river the reflection of Sarai. He sees Sarai for the first time in years, because Sarai is such a tsnua. She won't allow herself to be seen by even her husband. So, not a level that we're on, not a level that we can even understand nowadays. But Avraham Avinu finally sees Sarai, sees her face inside the river, the reflection inside the river, and he is, wow, he's just awed. And he says, "Oh my gosh, I didn't realize you were so beautiful. Imri Noach Osiat, say you're my sister. So therefore, I'll get good things, they'll give me money, and you'll live. You don't have to worry about dying, you know, about living the rest of your life, being taken by the Mitzrayim, and, you know, being brought into a Beis HaZonos. You don't have to worry about that. You'll live with me, then eventually we'll leave, and everything will be all good." What did he do when he went down to Mitzrayim?
Put her in a box.
Put her in a box. Who puts their wife in a box? You might think about that sometimes. But nobody would ever do that. It's your sister in a box. What in the world is that? That wasn't part of the plan. So it's all like, "Sorry, come in. It's like, what is this? What in the world was that? Why would he put her in a box? Such a thing is just strange altogether. And Pashat Pshat. You have to understand. Now, okay, I understand. In Pashat Pshat, here's the idea. Pashat Pshat, the idea is the following. Why put her in a box? Because the Pshat is, you gotta get her past the guards. The guards at the front gate could do anything to the immigrants that are trying to get inside the land. Those guards are crazy, and they could do anything they want. Once they get inside, then it's a civilized city. In a civilized city, people aren't going to go so crazy, they're not going to do so many things. They might kill Avraham Avinu in the middle of the night if they found out that Sarai was his wife, but they won't go ahead and do something crazy and take her and just bring her to Beis Paro. Avraham Avinu knew, all I have to do is get her past these guards. I have to get her past the guards, bring her into the city, then I'll say, "Oh, I have a sister here who wants to marry my sister." Everybody will be like, me, and they'll give me money. They'll give me money, and we'll end up making our riches, and then we'll go. And we'll say, "No, none of you are worthy," and then we'll get out of here. That was Avraham Avinu's plan. To be able to make the money that they needed without having to, you know, do business deals and whatever it is, but to be able to do it in a way that nobody's going to get killed, there will be no major problems over here, everything will work out.
It's pretty deceitful.
Yeah.
It's not...
That's okay with that.
Laman yitav li bavu reich is in order to do good for me because of you. That's a very strange line by Avraham Avinu. I'm not concentrating on that this year and going into what Avraham Avinu wanted and what good things he was going to get because of it. But in Pashat Pshat in the Pasuk, again, this is Pashat Pshat, not Drush. In Pashat Pshat, Avraham Avinu said, "This is the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised us. We'll make money. This is a way for us to be able to make business deals." Some people say, "Oh, I'll make a business deal with them because I want him to go ahead and offer me his sister for a wife." That's what he keeps thinking.
Well, but why is that any different than nowadays someone else justifying it?
Again, this is Pashat Pshat. I'm not going into the answers behind why he did this or what he did. There's drusha behind this. I'm sorry?
Basic marketing.
It's not marketing. This is just pashup shot. It's just pashup shot. You got to get through the cards. You got to be able to go inside the city. You have to go there in order to get food. And pashup shot, that's what it is. Mashenkin in the city, he could put her up for marriage, so to speak. But what happened was, she was found. She was found inside the box. Once she's found inside the box, what happened? What happened at that point? Oh, crazy thing. They said, bring her to Paro. Avram never assumed Paro would get involved in this. If it was Paro, he couldn't do anything. The king gets involved, he's not going to get any money. But not only is he not going to get any money, he could mamish be killed if there's found out to be something wrong. He never thought Paro would get involved in this. Why would the king ever get involved in such a thing? He never thought such a thing would happen. Now we have to rely on Anais. And Sarai also had to rely on Anais, on her own willpower, to be able to save her from everything that was going on. But that wasn't the plan. That wasn't the plan. The plan was to just get her past the guards, put her in the box up until that point, not to leave her inside there the whole time, get her inside, and once they're inside, then everything will be okay. Yosef was also brought in a box. Yosef, myself, Osim Labanim, applies in the exact same way. Yosef HaTzadik was brought in a box to be a slave. And it was supposed to be for him to live in the slums. When he was brought in as a slave to be sold down into slavery in Egypt by the Shvatim, for him to live in the slums. So the Shvatim, first, when they went to the worst parts of Mitzrayim to go check out, is Yosef here? Because that's what they expected. They didn't expect anything different. They assumed, they made a good assumption that that's where Yosef was supposed to be. But what happened to Sarai? She was in the treasure box, she was in the box, she was found, and she was brought into the palace of Paro. So what happened to Yosef? He was in the box, he was supposed to be in the slums, but he was brought to Paro. Then what ended up happening to him was all Maisa Avos Simon Labanim. Because this happened with Sarai, that's what ended up happening with Yosef HaTzadik. Sarai was one that was desired by everyone. It's the same as Yosef who was desired by everyone. And what ended up happening? They came into Paro's palace. They both came into Paro's palace. That was the Maisa Avos Simon Labanim. Although Avraham Avinu did not have this in mind, he meant for it to be in a different way. The Maisa HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought it out in the best way possible so that when Bnei Yisrael later came down to Mitzrayim, Yosef would not be in the slums. Yosef wouldn't be by the base of Zonos. Yosef would be in the palace taking care of everything for them. So that when they came down, things would be better for them and everything would be okay. All of this, just like Potiphar was there to be able to go and he wanted Yosef, there was a person there that wanted Sarah. There was power that wanted Sarah, and it happened to have been a very powerful Sar. That was Mamash, made it exactly like, put it to be together as exactly what Bnei Yisrael needed for when they went down to Mitzrayim. Shem Yishmol says that you had to have this happen before the War of the Four Kings. You had to have Avram and Sarai go down to Mitzrayim and not be affected by the Arias there. Not be affected by the Tumah that was in that land. They had to go down to Mitzrayim and hold their ground. Hold themselves up and say, I'm not going to become Tameh. Had they become Tameh, they would have entered into the Egyptian society. Once you enter into Egyptian society, that means you're hanging out with them and you feel bad about starting a war against people like them. Avinu never would have been able to fight against the four kings, knowing, as he did, that he'd destroy every single one of them if he thought that they were his friends. If he knew that I'm not like them, I'm a little bit different from them, I love them as human beings, and I want to help them in certain ways to bring them up. When he saw it, there's no way we're going to bring these people up. Nimrod is involved over here. Nimrod, my arch enemy, who threw me into the Kibshon Eish, those are the people we're fighting? There's no way. He's able to go up against them and fight. Had he gone in Mitzrayim and subjected himself to what Mitzrayim was all about, to the Arias, to the bad things that were there in the Tumah, he never would have been able to fight the war against the Dalamalachim. And that is the exact same thing for us nowadays. If we mix in to the nations that we're in, there's no way we're going to fight against the four Malchus, against the four kingdoms that were in Galusim. We won't be able to get out. And that's why 30,000 people left Babel when they went to build up the second base of Mikdash. There were millions of Jews that lived in Babel at the time. Millions. Ezra was able to pull out only 30,000 because they got involved in the country. They said, they looked at Babel and they said, these are our friends. These are our brothers. These are the people we hang out with. We can't stop hanging out with them. What are you going to do? We're just going to ditch them? We're just going to leave them alone? They couldn't stop themselves. Says Avraham, you want to go ahead and fight the four Malachim? You want to fight against the Goliath that you're in? You got to fight Mitzrayim. You got to fight the Tumah that you're in before that. Listen to this. This is an unbelievable story. One of the best stories I've ever heard. In Brisk, Rabbi Cohn said this out a couple years ago, I think, in a speech. In Brisk, the Maskilim, those who were into, you know, they were Jews, but they were a little more modern, and they stopped keeping some of the mitzvos, the starts, whatever it was, the remnants of the Reform movement. They made a play. And the play was the way of war according to the Jews. What Jews do in war. Okay? So, this is what Jews do in war. So what they did is, the Kohen got up, and he said, Mi o'ish, whoever is afraid, go home. Whoever has married a woman in this past year, go home. Whoever built up a house, whoever had a vineyard, and whoever has any sins, go home. So surely, every single person there that was in the Jewish army got up and left. There were only two people left in the war. Even the Kohen got up and left. Nobody was in the war. There were only two people. Chafetz Chaim and Rechaim Moshe Grudzinski. Those are the only two people who fought in the war. This is in the play in Brisk. Chafetz Chaim and Rechaim Moshe Grudzinski. And all the people are coming. And you have a person saying, the army is coming. The armies are coming against us. And Rechaim Moshe and the Chafetz Chaim sat there and they said, you should go first. And the Chafetz Chaim said, no, you're the Rosh Yeshiva. You should go first. Rechaim Moshe turned to Chafetz Chaim and said, you're the Kohen. You should go first. Chofetz Chaim turns to Rechaim Moshe, no, please, please, I'm Mocha on my kavod, you go first. And they started fighting about who should go first. They had one cannonball and one cannon. And they said, we'll go together, and they picked up the cannonball. These two old men picked up the cannonball together, they put it inside the cannon, and they were about to light it, and the people were about to come in, and then the play stopped. The play stopped. Rechaim Knievsky has two comments on this story. Number one, they won the war. Rechaim Moshe and the Chofetz Chaim won the war. That's why they stopped the play right there. Because even though it was only two people, and they only had one cannonball, and there was nothing else there, they had no artillery, no army, there was nothing else behind them, but Lamaise, they won the war. That's why even the Maskilim knew that. And they had to stop the play right there. That's one thing that Rechaim Knievsky said. There's another thing they said. With Rav Elyon Mun, who wrote the Sefer Derech Sicha, based on his letters to Rav Chaim, he's the right-hand man, the Shamash of Rav Chaim, he wrote... So Rav Chaim Knievsky, and he said the following. He said, who fought in the war against the four kings? I mean, this is a play, right? It's supposed to be a joke. But Lamaisa, there's some truth to it. There's some truth behind it. Who fought in this war? So what happened? We all know. Avraham Avinu, according to the Medrash, got up and said, who is afraid to go fight in this war? And all of his avodim left. And who was left? Who fought the war? Him and Eliezer. That's it. Two old men got up and fought the war while everybody else left. The whole story, the Maskilim's play, is a true story. It's a true story. How in the world did HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow two people to fight against four kings? It's not normal. That's not something normal. That is something you can make fun of. So he asked Rav Chaim, what's the pshat behind this war? Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu do it? So Chaim Knievsky said the following. He said, the Maskilim were wrong. Because everyone can do tshuva. Everyone can do tshuva. In the war where the Jews are fighting, the Jews that got up there and said, anybody who has an Avera, go home. There were Jews that said, I have an Avera. But they did tshuva and they stayed. There was never a time where they all went home. They did tshuva, and they stayed where they were. It was never a time where only two of them could fight. But by Avraham Avinu, they weren't Jewish. Non-Jewish people cannot do a full tshuva, which means that they couldn't fight in the war, because they did have chatayim. The only people who didn't have averos was Avraham Avinu and Eliezer Aved Avraham. See, they were the only two people able to fight the war. But it was only this time that happened. It never happened any other time. But Avraham and Eliezer fought in the war and nobody else fought with them.
Why can't they go and do a full tshuva?
There's a big question behind it, because the difference is that we were given as a spiritual Yerusha from Avraham and an ability to have something protecting our neshama. So when we do tshuva, all we're doing is any filth that goes on top of that film that's on top of our neshama, any filth that's on top of there, you can wipe it off and then you get a full neshama and it's perfectly fine. But by non-Jews, they don't have that film around. They don't have the film around. So what is it? They just have their neshama. Averos eat through the neshama. So although they can do tshuva and bring their neshama back, but the neshama itself is maimed. And therefore it's very easy to fall back into sin. So it's not a full type of tshuva like a Jew can do. A Jew will have a full neshama at all times that is unaffected by sin. While non-Jews will not have that. Their soul may be full, it may be perfect, but it can be affected by sin. That's the idea.
Eliezer wasn't Jewish.
Eliezer was as close to Avraham Avinu as you could possibly get. You can't get closer. Even Aner Ashko and Mamre weren't as close as Eliezer Aved Avraham was. Eliezer Aved Avraham at the time, he has the neshama of Metati, the neshama of Chanoch. We're talking about a person who, Lamaisa, who was just like, but even so, it didn't need to be Jewish. He didn't need to do tshuva. He never did anything wrong. Yeah, y'all.
Also, I heard that, Philip, you think that Avraham Eliezer destroyed the four kingdoms.
By themselves.
By themselves, right. But what I heard, Avraham wasn't...
He huge. You're talking about...
He was a warrior.
Masechet Sofer Perakov Beis says that Avraham Avinu was absolutely huge. There's a question whether that's literal or figurative. Literal or figurative. But we have to remember, he was over 75 years old. Yeah, meaning it would go by everybody else. He was over 75 years old. And the people that were fighting were not 75. They were much younger. So you think that even though he was bigger and whatever it was, still, and Eliezer could have been Og. There's a shot that Eliezer was Og. So it could be, okay, it's Og and this huge giant fighting against these four kings. Still, it's Nimrod. Nimrod's not Stama person. There were for sure other people there that they were fighting against that were absolutely huge. There's a lot of stuff to talk about with all this, but I have another shot. Based on what we just said, the other shot is different. Avraham Avinu and Eliezer were the only people who were able to fight in this war. You know why they were the only people who were able to fight? Because everybody else never got rid of their ties to the other nations. Every other person felt something to these nations, and when they went up against them, they were affected when they went down to Mitzrayim. They were affected. They had a little bit of tumor. So when Avraham Avinu went up to them and said, "Are you ready to fight these people?" They said, "Not really. I don't really want to fight them. I like them. I have nothing against them. I don't really want to fight them at all." So Avraham Avinu said, "Then get out of here." Avraham Avinu and Eliezer were the only people unaffected by the tumor of Mitzrayim. Even Lot got affected by the tumor of Mitzrayim. He went straight to Sodom. Straight to Sodom. He didn't pass go, never cost $200, just went straight to Sodom right afterwards. The shot behind him was, he got affected. The people got affected. They couldn't fight in this war. The only people who could was Avram and Eliezer. That's why, when we fought against Yavon, it was the Hashmonaim who fought, not the Misyavnim. The Misyavnim were not allowed to fight. Those who ended up agreeing with the Greek society, those who played sports, who were doing what the Greeks did, were not allowed to fight. It was only the Hashmonaim who fought. Only Mordechai went up against Haman. Nobody else had the idea. Nobody else had that concept to go up against Haman like that. It was only someone like Avraham Avinu who was unaffected by the tumah of everyone else. Only Mashiach ben Yosef is going to be able to save us out of this galus. Mashiach ben Yosef is the Shomer HaBris, Yosef HaTzadik, who was able to go down to Mitzrayim and not be affected by Yishas Potiphar, not have the tumah affect him. He's going to be able to save us out of Mitzrayim. End of time. That's the person, but not the rest of us. All the other, all the liberal sympathizers that we have here, they're not going to be able to fight because they don't want to fight. They like America. They like being around all these places. They don't want to fight. What, it's better to be in Eretz Yisrael and live in a one-bedroom apartment? I don't want to do that. Those people can't fight. Those people won't be able to do it. That's what we got from Avraham Avinu, and that's our spiritual DNA from Avraham Avinu. Marl Diskin, you have to hear this. This is just, Marl Diskin takes us to a different level. Geri Yezaracha, he's told, in the Brisbane of Israel, Geri Yezaracha Be'eretz Lo Lahem. Your children will be gerim in a land that's not theirs. And it's kind of easy to be a ger in a land that's yours. To be a ger in your own land would work out really well. Be'eretz Lo Lahem is completely unnecessary. Just say, Geri Yezaracha. That's all you have to say. Your children will be gerim, period. Be'eretz Lo Lahem, what do you need that for? Here's the idea. Sarah, according to Yonas and Benuzio, got a gift from Paro. This gift was given over to her and was kept by Bnei Yisrael the entire time until they came down to Mitzrayim. It was the city of Goshen. Sarah was given in her ksuva from Paro, and it was never taken away. The ksuva was given to her, the city of Goshen. That's why Yehuda, when they sent down, when Yosef was there and said, bring down everybody, Yehuda went straight to Goshen. That's why Yaakov was convinced, we can go down to Mitzrayim because we have a city there that's ours. Said Yaakov, it's my grandmother's city. We can go down there. We'll be able to be separate from everybody else. Yehuda went down and made a yeshiva in Goshen. And then, I mean, that's why Yosef was able to ask Paro for it. Let the Bnei Yisrael stay in Goshen. That's why the Mitzrayim never complained about it. The Mitzrayim didn't say, oh, they're taking away our land, they're taking away everything, because they lived in Goshen. And La'asid, Goshen is going to be part of Eretz Yisrael. The borders of Eretz Yisrael, La'asid Labo, is by Nachal Mitzrayim, by the river of Mitzrayim. Not the Nile River, but Nachal Mitzrayim. On the right side of Nachal Mitzrayim is Goshen. It's on this side. That's why they were able to eat the Korban Pesach there. Korban Pesach has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. How in the world could they eat Korban Pesach when they were sitting there in Mitzrayim? How could they do it on that first night? Because it was in Goshen. And Goshen was still okay. Goshen was part of Eretz Yisrael. It all counted together. It all counted within one thing. That was Yaakov's plan for Golos. Listen to this plan. Says Marl Diskin, Yaakov had an unbelievable plan for Golos. We're going to Golos, guys. We're going into exile. But we'll be okay. We're going to have a yeshiva. We're going to learn. We're all going to be there. The Shvatim are going to teach you. I'm going to teach you. We'll have all the Gedolim of Klal Yisrael. Everybody will sit there and learn. We'll be Osik and Yedias Hashem. We'll get everything that we need under Yehuda and Levi. Yehuda the Rosh Yeshiva and Levi the Masmid. We'll sit there and we'll learn all day long. And Yosef Why?
Goshen's part of Eretz Yisrael, and they're not in
Golos. Yosef had already set the law that any Kohen that was in the jurisdiction of Mitzrayim, any Kohen got money from the government, got food from the king's table, and didn't have to work. He had already set up this law. All the Kohanim, everybody in Mitzrayim, he moved them from house to one house to another, except for the Kohanim. Because anybody who's studying the laws, whatever laws it is, anybody who's studying laws will not have to be involved. Yosef had already set up that law. That's why Shevet Levi never worked. That's why Shevet Levi never worked. Because they didn't give it up. They stayed there the whole time. They sat and learned all day long. So they didn't have to do Shevet Mitzrayim. That's how Aaron was able to leave. Aaron left Mitzrayim to greet Moshe Rabbeinu. Nobody could leave Mitzrayim except Shevet Levi. Because a Kohen could do whatever they wanted. This is a priest, so to speak. Could do whatever they wanted. That was the law in Mitzrayim, and he couldn't go against that law. They're putter from taxes. They don't have to worry about food. They're taken care of. Had Bnei Yisrael done this the whole time, there would have been no problems in Mitzrayim. Says Maral Diskin, there never would have been a Golos. It never would have been Barak's Lo Lahem. It would have been Giriyah Zarako. That's it. Giriyah Zarako. You'll be sojourners, but you'll be in your own land. You'll have to be in a different land aside from Eretz Canaan. But then eventually you'll move yourself back to Eretz Canaan and everything will be okay. But Bnei Yisrael didn't continue that way. Bnei Yisrael left. Bnei Yisrael got involved. And it says the word Vayishritzu, and they spread out along all of Mitzrayim. Vayamaleya Oretzosam. All of Mitzrayim was filled with the Jews. The Jews didn't stay in the ghetto. The Jews didn't stay in their own yeshivas. They said, we're great businessmen. They went down to Mitzrayim and they started getting involved in all the business dealings. And they were really good at it. And the Mitzrayim hated them for it. Because even though there was only one Jew for every 300 Mitzrayim, one Jew for every 300 Mitzrayim, it felt like that Jew was important. The same way we have it today. That you feel like there's so many Jews that are living in America. But no, we're just smarter than everybody else. So it feels like we're better than everybody else. Vayamaleya Eretz Osam. They left the ghetto. They moved into Mitzrayim proper. They went into an Eretz Lo Lahem. They became a Geriyah Zarach of the Eretz Lo Lahem. They did in a land that wasn't theirs, not Goshen. They hung out with the natives. They hung out with the people that were living in Mitzrayim. And they got affected. Arias, they got protected from Avraham Avinu and Sarai. They didn't get affected by the Arias, but they did get affected by the Tumah surrounding them. And they went down to the 49th level of Tumah. It caused jealousy among the Mitzrayim. It caused complaints among the Mitzrayim. It caused argue among the Mitzrayim. Do we really need them? Do we need these Jews? What are we doing with them? And they started the Shevut. That's when the Shevut started. It took 113 years for that to happen. 113 years for Klal Yisrael to be able to start doing this wrong. But it took 113 years, and then after that 113 years, it was 86 years of absolute shibud, where it was horrible for them. Seth Hashem, Giri Yezaracha, only if the Eretz Lo Lahem. But if it's an Eretz Lahem, if they're in Goshen, you won't have to worry about anything whatsoever. The more widespread and well-known we are, the harder it is for us. That's a warning, even in a Medina Shel Chesed like America. That's a warning even here. The more you're like them, the more they hate you. The more you try to be like them, the more you want to be like them, and you show them, I want to be like you, I want to act like you, they say, we don't want to have anything to do with you. The further away we are, the less they care. The more impressed, oh wow. They sit there and they learn. They're doing their own thing. They're nebuchs. They're nebuchs. Can you believe that all of Lakewood is being paid for basically by the government? I mean, it's the poorest city in the country. And that's including Detroit. That's pretty impressive. It's a very famous thing that a lot of them are on. A lot of them are doing government grants and things like that. In a place like that, there's no complaints. Of course, there are people that are being, you know, everything. But there's no complaints. It's a question. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises us, and this is from the Maral Diskin, that in a place where everybody is sitting and learning, and they're doing what they're supposed to do, and they refuse to get involved in what's going on outside of the city, they don't just sit there and they do it, there won't be any issues. That'll be a galus to Eretz Lohem instead of an Eretz Lolohem. That's going to be a different type of galus, a different type of exile. It's not for everybody because not everybody can do that. Not everybody can be able to do that. But to know how to act in front of them and what to try and what to not to do. Now you can understand a huge medrash, an unbelievably strange medrash that everybody knows and known from kindergarten. Everybody's heard this medrash before and everybody goes crazy when they hear this medrash. Avinu was told to get a bris milah. He goes to Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre. And he says to Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre, his great friends, and he says to them, what should I do? Should I get a bris milah or should I not get a bris milah? What should I do? What am I supposed to do? And Aner and Eshkol tell him, nah, don't get the bris milah. And Mamre says, do it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, all right, I'm going to do it. And he goes and gets the bris milah, and that's why he's sitting in the beginning of Vayera, Be'elonei Mamre, among the oaks of Mamre, because Mamre gave him the good etza. But at the end of the day, Aner and Eshkol also got brisim. The Medrash says Aner, Eshkol, Mamre all got brisim. If they told Avraham Avinu no, then why'd they do it in the end? What, Mamre can install them? Is that what ended up happening? What is Aner and Eshkol? What do Aner and Eshkol do? What did they do over here? Plus, what in the world, why would Avraham Avinu ask them? What are you asking? Because Baruch Hu tells you, get a bris milah. You're like, I don't know. Let me ask. What are you asking? What's there to ask? Just do it. There's no question over here. Plus, this is a test. Every test that Avraham Avinu had went up in how hard it was. It was the hardest test and the most difficult test for him to do, says the Shemi Shmuel, was the Akedah. That was the most difficult test for him to do. That was the most difficult. So before that, Kipshana Esh had already happened. He had already left Eretz Yisrael because of the Rav. He'd already had Sarai been captured by Paro. He had fought against the four kings. Those are pretty darn hard tests. Being Moser Nefesh for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Cutting yourself a little bit is a hard test? Just cutting yourself? What's the big deal? You're willing to kill yourself. Of course you're willing to cut yourself. Doing the bris milah? No. He did ask. According to the Medrash, he has to honor Eshkol Mamre. He has to honor Eshkol Mamre. He did the Akedah without hesitation. But this he asks.
Well,
the question is,
that
why?
That kind of may have been like such things. I mean, surgery probably wasn't.
I understand, but you're willing to kill yourself. You're willing to kill yourself. You're throwing yourself into a kitchen age. You don't think you can cut yourself a little bit? Because I might die?
Death is a lot easier to take than
that. I hear you. I hear you. But
being infected and dying.
There's got to be a better answer than that. No, I mean, it's this. What does bris milah do? It gives you a perfect connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You and God are like one. But there's a flip side to that. You are different from every other person in the entire world. There is no one else like you. Avinu getting the bris milah would mean that he is completely different from everyone else out there. There would be absolutely no one there, and nobody could relate to Avraham Avinu anymore. He was different from everyone else there. Avraham Avinu's whole life was about helping people develop the relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Helping you find your way to the proper Derech Hashem. Are you going to find your way back to a Kodesh Baruch Hu? How can I do that if I'm not like them? I have no relationship with them. I'm not like them anymore. They're not going to listen to me. Said Avraham Avinu, what am I going to do? I'm not like them anymore. How could I give myself a bris milah and make myself different from them? Said Aner and Eshkol, if your shot in life, if your job in life is to help out people, then you're right. Don't get the bris milah. Maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is testing you. Maybe this is the test. Don't get the bris milah because your job is to help out other people. Mamre said no. Mamre said, there's an intellectual connection that every non-Jew will have with a Jew. How in the world could it be that a person goes in and gives himself a bris milah? They'll understand intellectually because God told them to, because God said do this. So even if you don't understand it, I see what he's trying to do. They might not be able to emulate it. They might not be able to follow it. They might not be able to do it themselves. But they'll be respectful. And they'll treat him with respect, and they'll listen to what he has to say, because you were able to do something for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though I couldn't. That's cool, can happen and have happened. That's a Jew's role in this world. What Mamre told Avraham Avinu is that your role in this world is to be the quintessential Jew, to be the light unto the nations, to help the other people, but not necessarily by being like them, by showing them what a true Jew is. Whether that's learning, whether that's in business, whether that's doing anything in the world, acting like a true Jew will earn you the respect of the other nations, and then there will be no need for a war. There will be no need for a fight. Everything will work out in the end. That's the idea why it was such a big test. Was Avraham Avinu going to make the right decision? Was Avraham Avinu going to get the bris milah and lose that connection with the rest of the people? Because he wanted to be with the rest of the people? Oh, is he going to give the bris milah? Be different from them, and yet still earn the respect. That's much, much harder to do. But Avraham Avinu was able to do that. He's able to fight the four kings, even though he knew that he could be Megayer many of them. Avraham Avinu was able to go into Mitzrayim and separate himself and not be with them. And this is what Avraham Avinu had to do over here by the bris milah as well. It's the same basic idea of separating himself. Well, stop with that. Have a good Shabbos. Yo.